Welcome to Tough Cookie Talks. I'm your host, Jenna Josephowski, but you can call me Jenna J. I'm a semi-retired professional dancer, dance teacher, and yoga teacher turned certified personal trainer and kettlebell instructor who helps active women learn to lift and get strong with equal parts challenge and compassion. After years of working in the fitness industry, I got sick and tired of watching people, including myself, run themselves into the ground trying to uphold the narrow-minded image of what our culture sees as healthy and fit. But instead of giving it all up, I decided that I'd rather change the game. Call out the BS, extract the good, and help others learn to use movement as a way to build themselves up rather than tear themselves down. On this podcast, we'll explore the intersection of fitness and anti-diet culture and all the gray areas in between. We'll let go of shoulds and judgments and dig into tough conversations with curiosity. Things get pretty spicy around here, so grab your headphones and let's do this. Hey friends, welcome to Tough Cookie Talks. Today we are having a conversation that I have been hoping to have for a long time, but finally got around to it. We are talking about all things related to intuitive eating, which is something that I am a big supporter of, that I do for myself, encourage my clients to do, and that I allude to a lot on this podcast. And one thing that I've noticed is that a lot of people that I come in contact with are maybe a little bit familiar with it or think that they're doing intuitive eating, but have some little bits that haven't quite stuck for them, some trouble navigating different parts of it, or maybe just have some misunderstandings about what it is and what it isn't. And that's exactly what we are talking about today with my guest, Naomi Katz. Naomi is a certified intuitive eating lay facilitator, body image coach, and owner of Happy Shapes Coaching in Asheville, North Carolina. She supports and holds space for folks who are ready to reject diet culture so they can reclaim their autonomy and consent over their mind and body and life. And you can learn more about Naomi and her coaching at www.happyshapes.co or by following her on Instagram at happyshapesnaomi or by listening to her podcast Satisfaction Factor, which is available on all podcast platforms. And I will link to all of Naomi's stuff in the show notes. But some of the things that we talk about on this episode are things that I think you're going to really appreciate. Number one is some of the red flags to look out for when you're trying to work with somebody on intuitive eating, or when you're following somebody and you're not sure if they're legit or the kind of person you even want to take advice from. We also talk about how to navigate those lingering hopes for weight loss that come up when you start down the path of intuitive eating, and also trying to just take the shame out of that and to help you potentially navigate the possibility or the reality of weight gain that comes for that. So I know you're going to love this episode. Let's go ahead and get into the conversation with Naomi. Hey, Naomi, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jenna. Thank you so much for having me. I'm psyched to be here.
I'm so excited to have you today. We have been following each other on Instagram for a very, very, very long time. I don't even know how we came about each other, but we've been running in the same circles online for a really long time. But in case the people don't also follow you and know you, can you tell us a little bit about you, who you are, what you do, and how you came to be doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am an intuitive eating and body image coach and owner of Happy Shapes Coaching. And it's funny, I actually think how we came to follow each other is that I started off as a personal trainer and nutrition coach, and like way back when as a Pilates instructor, but that was before I followed you. And so I think that's how I came across you, is when I was still in that space, because you know, the like weight neutral approach was always kind of how I approached that.
So
I started off doing fitness instruction and nutrition coaching, but like, honestly, it never really felt like the right fit to me. I have a personal and family history of eating disorders. And so like, I knew I didn't want to help people lose weight, but I also hadn't really like unpacked all of my own narratives about health and wellness and ability and all of that stuff.
So
I think at the time, even though I was trying to be weight neutral, I was probably still also reinforcing a lot of food and body and movement hierarchies. And then I learned about health at every size and intuitive eating and body liberation. And I started unpacking all my own stuff and it all just kind of clicked for me. I was like, I don't want to tell people how to eat. I don't want to tell people how to move their bodies, which, I mean, not that there aren't people out there like you who guide people towards an intuitive relationship with movement in their bodies, but that just, you know, I just realized what I really wanted to be doing was like helping people reconnect to their autonomy and their self-trust and their like physical cues so that they could make the best decisions about that stuff for themselves. So now that's what I do.
I love it. And I think, as I would say, it's all a different flavor of the same shit sandwich. even though it's like a really good shit sandwich in this case, like there's, I think the principles can be applied to a lot of different things. And today specifically, we're going to talk mostly about intuitive eating, which I'm really excited to talk about because I think for a lot of my clients and a lot of the people that follow me and listen, they're like kind of familiar with it. Or like they know what it is, or they've got like one foot in, one foot out, or they think they're doing it, but they've got some kind of like roadblocks or hangups around fully getting into it. So can you give us a quick down of what exactly intuitive eating is, what it isn't, for anybody that is new to this concept?
Yeah, totally. So, you know, intuitive eating is kind of a buzzword these days. Like it's got media coverage and like lots of people are talking about intuitive eating, but not all of those give a lot of backstory and not all of those are actually talking about intuitive eating either. So for one thing, when we're talking about intuitive eating, we're talking about a very specific framework and it's not a new framework. So it's the first book actually came out in 1995.
Okay.
We are now on the fourth edition, which came out in 2020. So like this is actually something that's been around for quite some time.
Yeah.
It's a specific framework that was developed by two dietitians, Evelyn Tribbley and Elise Resch, based on what they were seeing in their clinical experiences. So basically like their clients were coming in for weight loss. They would like initially lose some weight and then they would come back to have to lose that same weight and sometimes more all over again. And when they came back, they were coming back feeling a lot of guilt, feeling a lot of shame, feeling like they were failing and stuff like that. So Evelyn Tribbley and Elise Resch started looking at like the science of dieting, at non-diet practices and realized that like diets don't work. And they very frequently do harm. So they created this framework to help people reconnect to their bodies and pursue like actual sustainable health, which they call authentic health. It's weight neutral. It's health at every size aligned. And it's evidence-based. So there's like over 125 studies validating the process and the health benefits and all of that. And so like, it's this very specific set of like 10 principles, not just like this. Actually, maybe that's a good segue into what it's not.
Yes. No, I think that's great. And I love that you pointed out that there are studies. I actually have a Google Drive file on my computer that my friend Shore sent to me. I think it's something that's circulating the internet with a lot of various intuitive eating and health at every size related studies. So if anybody is listening to this, that's like, this isn't real. Like just Jenna@itsjennaj.com. I will send you the Google Drive and you can read the research. But anywho, Naomi, what is intuitive eating not?
Right. So, you know, one of the things is that it is not just when people say, oh, I'm not dieting, I'm eating intuitively. Like, it's not just like, oh, I'm eating mindfully. It is a specific and well-defined framework of 10 principles. Whereas like when people are like, oh, I'm eating mindfully, I'm eating intuitively, that like that can basically mean anything. And it's often used as a euphemism for portion control or for careful eating and things like that.
Yeah.
So like, you know, the intuitive eating framework definitely incorporates concepts and practices about mindfulness, but it is not the same as just, oh, I'm eating mindfully. So there's that.
Yeah.
It is also not the hunger and fullness diet.
100%.
So like, intuitive eating is a lot more than just eat when you're hungry and stop when you're full.
Would you be willing to share, and I know I'm putting you on the spot here because I didn't ask you, would you be able to give us a rundown of those 10 principles?
Of course, yeah. So the first principle is reject the diet mentality. Principle 2 is honor your hunger. Principle 3 is making peace with food. Principle 4 is challenge the food police. Principle 5 is discover the satisfaction factor. Principle 6 is feel your fullness. Principle 7 is cope with your emotions with kindness. Principle 8 is respect your body. Principle 9 is, I can't remember the full title, but it's joyful movement. Mm-hmm. And principle 10 is gentle nutrition.
Got it. Okay, good, good. Thank you for running through those. And if you want a rundown, like, with specific things or what all of that stuff is, definitely encourage you all to read the book, get the latest edition of the book. There's also a workbook, or to work with an intuitive eating counselor like Naomi, because there's so much to dive into it. And I think sometimes, and we'll talk a little bit about this, it's really easy to get kind of stuck. Like, a lot of those principles are kind of hard to tackle on your own, depending on what kind of background you're coming from when you first start this kind of work. So can we talk for a moment about, like, when you're working with somebody on intuitive eating, the scope of practice, like, what can you personally help somebody with holding that certification that you do? And would they need a registered dietitian? Because if I'm understanding correctly, and I know this could be slightly different, so you correct me if I'm wrong, because I had actually looked into doing an intuitive eating counselor certification years ago. And I remember messaging with Evelyn, and they have kind of two things. One of them is called like a certified intuitive eating counselor. And the other one is a certified intuitive eating, like, lay facilitator, I think are the titles. And what I was told is that they're both the same thing, but the difference is, like, what kind of, I guess, like, other background or degree you have. So for example, if you're, like, a registered dietitian, or I think, like, maybe like some kind of licensed therapist, or, as I discovered, a certified personal trainer with your personal trainer certification from ACSM.
And only ACSM,
but not NASM. You can't have, like, the one, but you can have the other. But I was told the information is basically the same. It's just, like, the scope of what you can do with it. Yeah. And so, scope of practice is important, I think, to me. So tell me a little bit more about that.
I am a certified lay facilitator.
Okay.
Because my personal training certification was also through NASM, not ACSM.
Yeah. That's bullshit.
It is literally the exact same certification process. Like, there is no difference whatsoever. The only difference is what your underlying background and expertise is.
Sure.
So I am not a therapist. I'm not a registered dietitian. I had the wrong personal training certification.
Yeah.
So what that means for me is that I can't provide, obviously, any mental health services because I'm not a therapist.
Right.
I also can't provide any kind of, like, specific nutrition or dietary recommendations because I'm not a dietitian.
Yep.
I don't work with folks who have active eating disorders.
Okay.
Although I do work with folks who are in stable recovery.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, years out from their, you know, from their active eating disorder, have gone through the process of recovery and stuff like that. I also don't work with folks on any kind of medical nutrition therapy, though I definitely do work with folks who are separately seeing a registered dietitian for that kind of support, like for PCOS, diabetes, et cetera.
Sure.
Basically, the work that I do as an intuitive eating coach, who is not a therapist or a dietitian, is I support folks in, like, breaking out of the diet mindset, reframing narratives about food, bodies, and movement, reconnecting to their physical cues of hunger, fullness, satisfaction, and, like, really, like, reclaiming their autonomy and their self-trust from diet culture. So, like, we do a lot of work on learning to recognize and honor our needs, like, yes, with food, but also outside of food, because, like, most of the time, if we're not honoring our needs with food, we're probably also not honoring our needs in other areas of our lives.
100%.
And so like I take a really zoomed out approach to intuitive eating where like we really focus on the mindset stuff. We talk about, you know, self-trust, body image, like what people value in their everyday lives and like how diet culture interferes with that and how we can navigate this lifelong process of rejecting and unlearning, like how we can recognize the systems that influence how we feel about food and our bodies and like how we can take our power back from those systems and stuff like that.
Yeah, that sounds really, I think, really wonderful and almost that you're taking it to a place where maybe somebody wouldn't be able to take it on their own if they're just reading the book and trying to do it. Because what it sounds like to me is that you're probably asking people a lot of important questions to consider for themselves that they hadn't even thought.
Yeah. So in my experience working with people, a lot of times by the time people come to me, they have already read the book. Mm-hmm. Maybe they've even like messed around with the workbook a little bit. But you know, and so they know a lot of stuff intellectually, you know, like they know the failure rates of diets. They know the harm diets cause. They know that, you know, all bodies are good bodies and stuff like that. Like they might even know the roots of diet culture, but it's all like intellectual. It's in their heads, essentially. Yep. So when by the time people come to me, it's usually about like, I know this stuff, but I can't feel it for myself. Like I can't like internalize it for myself.
Yes.
And so by like working together, we kind of like bridge that gap.
Yeah, that's great. And I think one thing, and you can tell me more if your clients struggle with this. I know personally, I think from the personal training realm, I see a lot of people that struggle with this, especially if they're kind of working on intuitive eating in a parallel way to working with me on exercise related stuff. When you start intuitive eating, we're all told like, it's not a diet, like that's not the point. And you're also told, and I'm not sure if this is like the latest stuff that's circulating, but this is certainly what I heard, is that we don't know what's going to happen with your weight when you start intuitive eating. You might lose weight, you might gain weight, or you might stay the same. We just don't know. And I think a lot of people come into it with that mentality of like, I hope I lose weight. Mm-hmm. Like I think a lot of people come into it hoping they're not going to be the person that gains weight, and then having a lot of shame around, because they intellectually know, oh, like diet culture is bad, I shouldn't want this, like I understand all good body, all good, I cannot speak, let's try that again, I understand that all bodies are good bodies, and yet like it's fine for other people to gain weight but not me.
Yeah, so I think first of all, you're absolutely right. This is so common. So many people start intuitive eating or like even are like reluctant to start because they feel like, well, I can't do it because I'm holding on to this, you know, I still kind of want weight loss. And you can't do intuitive eating if you want weight loss.
Right.
And so the first thing is like, it's super common and there's specific reasons why it's so common, like none of which are your fault. Right. Yep. So like first, the vast majority of intuitive eating professionals are thin white women. Yep. So like, even though they're like, they might be saying all the right things about bodies and about weight gain and like all of that stuff, but like, it still totally makes sense for people to think that they're going to look like them if they do intuitive eating.
Yes.
Like, diet culture kind of like conditions us to think of like bodies as business cards, right? Eat like me and you'll look like me. And yeah. So like we're conditioned to see these thin providers and be like, oh, well, if I do it, I could probably be thin too.
Yes. Oh my God. You're so right. And I think about the same thing. And I'm not sure if you experienced this when you were a Pilates instructor. I know I felt like this a lot in the yoga world. I remember like all of the yoga teachers were just, you know, like so just like long and thin and just like graceful and waif-like. And I just remember thinking to myself like, oh, if I become a yoga teacher, I'll look just like that. And
Totally.
It's lo actually, and behold.
It's one of the reasons why like I can't stand those what I eat in a day posts, like even intuitive eating versions, like nope. But so like that's a big reason why we sometimes think that like, oh, intuitive eating, well, like I'll end up in a smaller body.
Yeah.
The other thing is the way we talk about weight gain and intuitive eating, like as professionals. So like the common thing is you might lose weight, you might gain weight, you might stay the same. And everybody talks about those things as though like they're all equally likely. And the thing is, like, and this is kind of a hot take. I don't have a study to back this up.
I love hot takes.
Anecdotally, if you come into intuitive eating after restricting, and especially if you are in a straight size or small fat body, you're probably going to gain weight. Like, if you've been suppressing your body size with restriction or like over exercising or whatever, like, of course you're going to gain weight when you stop doing that.
Yeah.
And so like acting like all of these three outcomes are equally likely is actually kind of misleading.
Yes. I appreciate you saying that. I really do. I really do.
Awesome.
You know what I'm thinking about now? What? This is ADHD talking. Do you remember that toy from the 90s? It was called Puppy Surprise.
Yes. Yes.
It was like a puppy that had like little tiny puppies inside of it. And it could like, there could be three or four or five.
Yes, I actually do remember that.
But every time I got Puppy Surprise, I always got three.
Oh my God, yeah.
Like nobody ever got.
But you kept buying them, right? Because you thought maybe someday you'd get the one with the five.
Yeah. I feel like maybe there's.
Oh my God, there's totally something there.
There's something there.
It's the same thing as like dieting, right? Like at this point, so many people know that statistic about like how like at least 95% of diets fail.
Yep.
But like, we always think that we're going to be in that 5% of success, right? But like, that's not how math works. Like we can't all be in that 5%.
No.
And like, but again, we're like conditioned for that. Yeah. And so like intuitive eating professionals, like we need to do a better job of like not presenting these things as equally likely outcomes.
Yeah. Also just kind of being like, you're probably going to gain weight. And yet I think one thing that can be really tricky is when you are somebody who's navigating experiencing weight gain with intuitive eating, that can be frustrating. And then I hear a lot of people wondering, like, number one, how can this be healthy? And number two, like, is it ever going to stop? Because I think we all hear too about this experience where like you start to gain weight, but eventually like your weight stabilizes and you're not going to keep gaining weight forever and ever and ever. Mm-hmm. But I think when people are in that experience, it just feels like forever. And it's like, when am I going to stop having to buy new pants? And I'm putting a voice to this because people feel so much shame about speaking about it, especially when they intellectually get the problems with diet culture. And how do you help people navigate that? It is such fuckery.
Yeah. So, I mean, for one thing, the set point weight thing, again, the way we talk about that is kind of problematic. Like, because like, is set point weight a real thing? Like, yes, totally. It is absolutely a real thing. But most of us have absolutely no idea what that set point weight looks like because we have never seen it. Mm. Like, but we all think that it's going to be like a socially acceptable smaller body. And like, that's not realistic. It's the same as like the puppy surprise, right? Like body diversity is real. So like for a lot of us, our set point weight is going to be in a fat body. Even if we have never been in a fat body, we've never allowed ourselves to be in a fat body in our lives. And so what that means is that as we start to navigate intuitive eating and we start putting on weight, we can like go through a lot of stress around like, is this my set point weight? Is this my set point weight? Is this my set? And it's like, so like, we kind of have to like let go of the set point weight thing. Like, I don't actually think it's a particularly useful thing to have in our minds as we go through this stuff. I should add some nuance to that. I think it can be. I think for the specific concern of, you know, oh my God, I'm just going to keep gaining and keep gaining and keep gaining. Like, I guess it can be helpful to have in the back of our minds, like that there is such a thing as set point weight. And also the real work here is to unpack, like, what would it mean if you did get bigger and bigger and bigger, bigger? Like, how do we navigate your body at any size, essentially? Yeah. And that's hard. It's really hard. You know, fortunately, the first principle of intuitive eating is reject the diet mentality. Like, it's not hunger. It's not fullness. It's not nutrition. It is rejecting diet culture and like looking at the roots of diet culture and like working on letting go of some of these desires. So there's that, but like, it's long-term. You know, we do, when I work with clients, like we do some like really initial, like right off the bat, we usually do some work on like letting go of the thin ideal and the diet culture fantasies and stuff like that. But like, we continue to do work on that through every single other principle. Like, it is not something that just you address it once and then you're done. It is a lifelong process of peeling back those layers and learning to be uncomfortable, honestly. Like, there's a lot of discomfort in letting go of the thin ideal because it's so rooted in us. And because weight gain can come with a bunch of really hard realities, right?
Yeah.
Like, we live in a fatphobic society. So when we gain weight, that comes with real consequences. It can come with like loss of social capital, fewer clothing choices, different treatment by medical providers, less accessibility to public spaces. Like, all of that is real. And we have to allow ourselves to feel like grief and anger and sadness about all of those realities while also recognizing other realities. So things like the reality that diets don't work and they don't cause harm. So like, you know, learning to look at like what your own success rate with dieting has been in the past. Like, what does it cost you? Is that actually a realistic solution to anything for you? Right?
Right.
Learning the facts about how health and weight are not synonymous, right? Like, if health is a concern, we can directly address those health concerns rather than focusing on weight. And like, you know, in my case, that would involve referring people out to a registered dietitian or a health at every size aligned physician or something like that.
Yeah. I think of everything that you're saying right now, and it really sounds, I love making parallels between like strength training, which is what I primarily coach, and intuitive eating. And what I'm hearing you say right now, when you talk about this, it's building that strong foundation, which means like, if you don't start from the basics and kind of build your way up upon that, then it's going to be really hard. And I'm thinking right away about the people that I know that want to jump immediately to the like gentle nutrition part, which is at the end when they maybe haven't dug deep enough on those earlier principles. And it's going to be that much harder to have success with something like intuitive eating, in the same way that like, if you've not figured out how to do a body weight squat and then you decide to go do barbell back squats, you're going to have a really hard time with that skill and probably set yourself up for failure. And also, even if you can do a barbell back squat, you're still going to do body weight squats sometimes.
Yes. Oh my God. Exactly. And then like on that same analogy, like having like a framework to work through is also like, you know, you can do a different workout every day, but it's going to be really hard to progress without some kind of structure and some kind of plan and stuff like that. The same thing is true here. You can just quit dieting. That's fine.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to like feel really comfortable with walking away from diet culture and like be able to let go of these narratives and all of that stuff. The structure and the framework helps you to like have a strategy moving forward and build on that foundation and those building blocks in it feels a little more safe and structured and like easier to approach when you have that kind of step-by-step building on itself kind of a situation.
100%. I think that's so important and it's so valuable. This is probably, I'm going to ask you a question that I already know the answer to.
Okay.
How long does it take most people to like really get to a solid place of intuitive eating?
Okay, so that's a great question.
The answer is probably it depends.
Yeah, that's, but a, as that's somebody, a hard it depends.
as somebody who works with clients on this, what can we expect? Manage our expectations. We call you up tomorrow. We start working on intuitive eating. When are we going to have this figured out, Naomi?
That is an excellent question. And like the answer is kind of, there's two parts to the answer.
Okay.
So like most of the people that I work with for about a year.
Okay.
And it is absolutely a lifelong process. There is no like, oh, I'm done now.
Yes.
Like that's not, but at the end of my time with people, you know, they're in a place where they can navigate it themselves. They have the foundation. They like, you know, when narratives pop up and when these hard feelings pop up, they have the tools to meet those things without like spiraling out and having it like take over their lives, and stuff like that. You know, it's interesting. I don't know that we're ever fully free of diet culture and diet culture narratives because we live in the world we live in.
Yes. Right? That's such a good point.
But we can get better at navigating it and like being resilient to it and things like that. And it's so important to give ourselves so much compassion and like space and time to do this work. Like I see people all the time say like, oh, I've been doing intuitive eating for a year, but I'm still struggling. And it's like, yeah, a year is nothing when you're talking about a lifelong process, right?
Yeah.
But we often think these things have to have shorter timelines, again, because diet culture has conditioned us to these like short things.
30-day challenge.
Yeah, it's like 21-day fix, Whole30, like whatever. So like a year in diet culture time is forever. But like a year, when you look at like, when you look at this as lifelong work, is nothing. So like, we have to zoom out when we're talking about like, how long is this going to take?
Yeah. And kind of manage our expectations. I'm seeing like the fitness parallels already, thinking about like how so many people will do, you know, like the 30-day fitness challenge and stuff. And you don't just do that and then you get to be like, you know, strong forever or whatever. Like you never, if you want to maintain that, you never really stop, you know, going to the gym and doing the things. And if you do stop for a while, then you can expect it to kind of go away and you're going to need to come back, and it's, you're not going to have as many tools to kind of combat what's ever being thrown at you.
Totally.
And then you just have to revisit it and rebuild it.
Yeah. And you do build like a muscle memory for this stuff too over time. Like that's kind of one of the things, again, like at the end of my time working with people, it's not that they never have diet thoughts again, or like they never feel pulled towards dieting again. It's that they have like the muscle memory to be like, oh, like I know what this thought is. I know what's behind it. I know it doesn't serve me. And so I'm going to move past it, basically. Like,
it just is. And I'm thinking about, you know, like the world that we live in and how it just keeps coming like flying back in your face. Like you think you're good until all of a sudden you're having a Super Bowl party and, you know, somebody's talking about how they can't eat any of the snacks that you have because they're doing a detox or whatever. And it makes you feel some kind of way about, you know, like, am I doing this wrong?
Right. But, well, and that's one of the reasons why, like, being able to go back to, like, so when I work with folks on reframing this stuff, like, we really, like, ground into things like, I mean, what are the actual facts? Like, what do we know factually, scientifically about this stuff? What do our lived experiences tell us? And what are our values around this?
Yeah.
And so, like, being able to ground into that stuff is, like, you know, anytime somebody like something like that comes up, you have these tools to go back and be like, okay, what do I know? What of my lived experiences? What do I value? How does that align? Oh, that's not for me. I can move on.
Right. Right. And it definitely takes time. And I think to be in a place where you're like fully ready to embrace intuitive eating, I think you really have to kind of have what I call, and I'm not the person to coin this term, but I talk about it all the time, like the fuck this, I'm done moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to feel like you have that proof for yourself. For me, it was actually Whole30, where you feel like you're doing all of the things right. Like you are restricting the hardest and you are doing all of the things and it's still not working for you. And then at that point, you're like, why bother? Whatever.
Totally.
Like, you just know it's not working.
P.S. Whole 30 is definitely the one that a lot of people jump ship after.
So, yeah. You see that with a lot of your clients?
I totally do. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you have to have that moment 100%. And it doesn't have to be like, and now I have no desires for weight loss or any of diet culture's promises anymore. Like, that's not realistic. And so, like, you don't have to be free of those thoughts before you start working on intuitive eating. Like,
yes.
I like to think of that as like if you wanted to learn Spanish, but you felt like you had to learn Spanish before you hired a Spanish teacher, like, why would you do that? That's the process. Right. That's literally what you're learning. And so, you know, again, always just remember that first principle is about rejecting diet culture. It's not about any of the other stuff. So, like, right. You don't have to do that stuff on your own before you start working on intuitive eating.
Yes. And, you know, thinking about unrealistic expectations, you were talking about a lot of intuitive eating providers being thin white women. I think on the flip side, a lot of us, when we start on this journey, we follow the advice of, you know, follow people of different body types and, you know, branch out and stuff. And so then we follow these people who have maybe been on this journey for a really long time. And, you know, they're running around, you know, in a larger body, in a bikini, being like, I love my body. And then you feel like you're wrong because, like, all these other people love their bodies, but, like, why can't I?
Totally. And it's so important to remember that, like, they didn't flip a switch. Like, mm-hmm. You are looking at, like, chapter 90, not chapter one.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. And potentially just a lot of smoke and mirrors, like social media tends to bring.
Also that, yeah.
Regardless, you know.
Always take anything you see on social media with a grain of salt. Like,
right.
And it, actually, I mean, that's a really good point. Like, I truly feel like one of the biggest things, that one of the biggest takeaways from intuitive eating is critical thinking skills.
Yeah.
Like, I often think that more than teaching my clients like the intuitive eating framework, what I do is I support them in building critical thinking skills and like the ability to look at stuff on social media and be like, what's real and what's not real and what applies to me and what doesn't apply to me and all of that stuff. Because the other thing is that, like, okay, so this is a lifelong process and we need to give ourselves time and like that it's going to be exponentially harder and maybe take exponentially longer when you add in marginalizations. Like, are you disabled? Are you queer? Are you Black? Are you, you know, any of these other layers of marginalization that are going to make that loss of social capital and stuff even harder to navigate?
100%. And I see this a lot with clients who then have a lot of guilt around it, who are like, I shouldn't want to lose weight anymore, but also I just want to be more comfortable on the airplane.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
There are just so many, I think, like, societal things that we bump up against.
Yeah.
On a lot of levels.
It's a lot of learning how to navigate both and. Like,
yes,
there are very, very hard realities around being in a larger body in society. And there are also realities about the extent to which we can control our body size and like the harm it might do if we do make those attempts. And so, like, how do we find a place where we can like hold both of these things to be true?
Yes, I am all about all of the both ands. I think it's really, really important in a lot of ways. Yeah, I feel like I could go down a bunch of different rabbit holes. Like, now I feel like I just want to have you come back and talk about critical thinking because I think it's so necessary. But can I spring a quick question for you about that?
Totally.
Okay. So I think there is a lot of intuitive eating advice out there coming from a lot of different angles, meaning like there are people that are coming at intuitive eating from an eating disorder recovery perspective. There are people that are coming at intuitive eating with maybe a side of, you know, like chronic illness management. There are people that are coming at intuitive eating in larger bodies, in smaller bodies. There's just a lot of people talking about it. How do we know what advice is meant for us and when to tune it out? Is there like a framework that you have your clients kind of run through their minds? Because I think the same can be true in the fitness realm as well. How do you help people navigate that?
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, I think there are, with intuitive eating, there's a couple of things that are like immediate red flags, right? Mm-hmm. Like any mentions of weight loss, mm-hmm. including things like reaching your healthy weight or yeah. something like that, like immediate red flag. Like that's just
immediately no.
That's just immediately no. Exactly.
Immediately no.
Rules or like hard rules or meal plans are like probably also a red flag in the intuitive eating space. I guess the exception being eating disorder recovery, where like a registered dietitian might be providing meal plans for weight restoration for people in ED recovery. That doesn't mean that they can't work with intuitive. That doesn't mean that they're not qualified to do intuitive eating for non-eating disorder recovery clients. You know what I mean? Like, the meal plan serves a legitimate purpose in that context. It's not just like, I'm selling meal plans.
So right. Like, and also that meal plan, just spoiler alert, that should be prescribed specifically for you from your registered dietitian. Not, it shouldn't come in an Instagram swipeable.
Yeah. 100%. Very, very good point.
If it's in the swipeable, it is not for you. Keep right. scrolling. Keep
outside scrolling. Of that, I think the question always comes that like you ask yourself kind of the same questions always. I think it's always about, you know, does this align with my lived experience? Is this accessible to me?
Uh-huh.
So for instance, like it doesn't matter if like objectively fresh vegetables are good for you. Like uh-huh. they are. We know that. Veggies are good for you.
Yep.
That doesn't matter if I can't access vegetables.
Right.
Right? Like that advice does me no good whatsoever. And so like it's important to be able to like match things up to our lived experiences and what we have access to see if uh-huh. something is for us.
Yep.
And then does this align with my values? Right? Yeah. So like, you know, we know that diet culture has a lot of roots in, you know, anti-Blackness and healthism and ableism yep. and stuff like that. I mean, and it's not like that stuff doesn't show up in intuitive eating spaces too.
Uh-huh.
And so like being able to look at stuff and be like, how does this align with my high level values, like yes. my systemic and structural values, but also how does this align with my like data, what I value in my day-to-day life?
Right.
And, like, how, you know, just really being able to like prioritize your own needs and preferences and lived experiences as opposed to outsourcing expertise to other people.
Yes. And that I talked about that a little bit. I recorded an episode a while back where I was talking about like mistakes to avoid when you're trying to, I think it was like when you're trying to do fitness without diet culture, essentially. Mm-hmm. But I think I fell into the trap with intuitive eating in particular, where I would follow somebody and maybe I did fundamentally agree with what they were saying. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. I liked them and I thought they were giving good advice. And also they were providing advice for people in eating disorder recovery. And that was not me. So even though I thought they were cool people giving good advice and I really liked what they were doing, they weren't talking to me in all situations. And I think I internalized that for a long time. And also, like, even when it comes to like the joyful movement principle, I feel like I need to record a whole podcast episode on my, like, I have newfound gripes with joyful movement.
I love that. I can't wait to hear that.
I've got a bone to pick with joyful movement. But really just listening to other people talking about what joyful movement was based on their lived experience with it and realizing that maybe it wasn't disordered if I liked something that was different than what they said was joyful.
Yeah, absolutely. I think at some point it becomes like, if it makes you feel bad, it's probably not for you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it is too. And that's a whole, like I said, another episode for another day, because also like sometimes, you know, sometimes we have what I call a PB&J workout, mm-hmm. which is like, you know, okay. So when you like eat a meal and it is like the most delicious gourmet mm-hmm. meal and you're like, oh, this is so satisfactory. Just like in every way, it just like appeals to all your senses and it's delicious and it's fulfilling and whatever. And sometimes you slap together a peanut butter and jelly sandwich as you're running out the door because it checks the box.
Totally.
And I think we're allowed to, you know, not have every workout be like a 5-star Michelin meal and just have a PB&J workout sometimes.
Absolutely. And like, there's direct parallels to that with an intuitive eating too. Like, of course there are. But it reminds me of Linda, who on Instagram is Little Winged Potatoes.
Yes. Okay. I know who you're talking about. Yes.
And she has an excellent post about how like joyful movement is often not it, especially for folks with chronic illness or disability or things like that, that like tolerable movement is sometimes the thing. And that like feeling like you have to be feeling joy about it can actually be an obstacle to movement.
Mm-hmm. Or then I find with a lot of my clients, they feel like they're doing it wrong, or, you know, we're working together for, you know, like months and months even. And they come to me in a session. They're like, okay, I feel great when I'm done, but like, why aren't I becoming the person that just loves to work out all the time and like really wants to do this? And I'm like, maybe you won't.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, not for nothing. I've been doing intuitive eating for a really long time. And sometimes I do not want to eat any vegetables ever.
Yeah.
Like, and you know what? I find ways to get veggies in me anyway. And like, right. Sometimes that means I eat a greens gummy or something like that instead of like making myself a salad, because like, I know there's a purpose to it, but I'm just not getting a lot of satisfaction out of it. And like, that's okay.
It. Yeah,
like
it is.
Perfectionism is like a diet culture or white supremacist bullshit.
100%.
Everything.
100%. Is there anything else that you want to add? Is there anything that we didn't touch on or anything else that you feel like the people really need to know about intuitive eating and all things related?
I don't think so. I mean, other than just really understanding that it's a process and like, it's going to look different for everybody and like, that's okay.
Yes. 100%. 100%. So where can we find you? How can we work with you? Tell us all the things.
So you can find everything about group and one-to-one coaching, pay what you can calls, free stuff. Like I just released a Reframing Diet Culture Narratives workbook that's free. And like there's a free 7-day email course on dumping diet culture. You can get all of that stuff on my website, which is happyshapes.co.
Great.
Social media, I am really only on Instagram, which is at happyshapesnaomi. And you can also find me on the podcast that I co-host with my good friend, Sadie Simpson, who is also a fitness professional, that is called Satisfaction Factor. And you can find that on any podcast platform. And we also have an online community that goes along with that called the Satisfaction Space.
Nice. I'm going to link to all of this in the show note and definitely check out Naomi's podcast. I was just saying before we hit record on this, I was being a creeper last night before I recorded. I'm like, let's see if Naomi was on any other podcasts so I can get ideas for like what to ask about. And then I realized you had your own podcast and it's awesome. And I like started binge listening to it. I think I got in like 4 or 5 episodes last night and it's really, really good. So I think if you like what I talk about on here, but want to just get some different angles on it, I feel like the ones that I listen to hit up a lot of it from like more of a like food and like overall diet culture perspective in a way that was really interesting. And I'm sure there are all sorts of other great topics that I haven't even gotten to yet, but it's good stuff. So give it a whirl. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for being here, Naomi. We'll talk soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jenna. This was awesome.
Thanks. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Naomi as much as I did. Once again, I will link to all of the ways that you can follow and work with her in the show notes. So definitely go do that. And that's all I've got for today. So have a great day, have a great week, and we'll talk soon. Thanks again for tuning into Tough Cookie Talks. I'm so glad you're here. If you want to learn more about me and how we can work together, visit my website, itsjennaj.com, or follow and tag me on Instagram at itsjennaj. I would love to hear from you. If you liked this episode and want to hear more, make sure you click subscribe and follow along so that you don't miss a single show. Then take a moment and leave me a 5-star rating and review so that we can help this podcast and this message reach even more people. Have a great week, and we'll talk soon.